This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It is said to be in about 50% of all the products we buy, from chocolates to soap to lipstick. Palm oil is the most widely consumed vegetable oil on the planet, but it also grows in the same area as tropical rainforests, and the uncontrolled clearing of land for conventional oil palm plantations has led to widespread loss of these irreplaceable forests. The Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, or better known as RSPO, is a not-for-profit association which aims to transform markets to make sustainable palm oil the norm. Dr. Daryl Weber, the Secretary General of the RSPO, joins me to discuss the challenges, the efforts and the achievements faced by the RSPO since its inception. Welcome to the show, Dr. How are you today?
I'm fine. Good afternoon, Meera. Good afternoon, listeners of BFM.
Good afternoon. You know, could you give me the background story on the RSPO? How did it come to be? What was the rationale behind it?
Well, the Roundtable of Sustainable Palm Oil was created in 2004. But the discussion that led to this creation started way, in early 2000. And one of the catalytic events that caused this discussion to begin is two things. One was the extremely bad regional haze at the time in the late 1990s and early 2000, and also the launch of the Millennium Development Goals by the United Nations, in which all countries around the world signed up for. So the combination of these two things really helped push forward this agenda that something had to be done about agriculture commodities that had large footprints, and palm oil was one of them. And kudos to those visionaries who got together and decided that, yes, they needed to do something before they were asked to do something. Mm-hmm. So they created it.
As I said, it is a non-for-profit association. Who are your members?
Wow, we've got a very large membership base, but we can split them up into maybe 7 category groups. We have producers of palm oil, meaning, you know, like the Sime Darbys, the IOIs of Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So we've got we have producers, we have consumer goods manufacturers, we have retailers, we have financiers who finance all this, the processors, the bankers. We already said the bankers, the environmental NGOs, and the social NGOs.
Okay,
and so 7 stakeholder groups.
Sure. And how do you decide who is eligible to be a member?
Well, membership is based on us doing a little bit of due diligence on the companies. We check, of course, whether they are legal entities. We, of course, check whether they fit into one of those 7 categories. But we must also ask them to comply with our code of conduct. So if you want to be a member of RSPO, you're actually signing on to a code of conduct. You need to behave in a certain way. And basically, what the code of conduct describes is that you should either promote or produce certified sustainable palm oil.
And what is certified sustainable palm oil?
Certified sustainable palm oil, put it very simply, is palm oil that is produced legally, palm oil that is takes care of the environment, palm oil that is free of social conflict, and palm oil that is profitable.
How do you take care of the environment?
So we take care of the environment through several ways. The RSPO and its stakeholders developed a standard that describes what we call sustainable palm oil. And sustainable palm oil is essentially palm oil that's developed in a way that's good for people, planet, and profit. And that standard, if employed by our members, would ensure that negative environmental impacts will be a thing of the past. There would be no such thing as land grabbing, for example, or no such thing as ostracizing or victimizing the local communities, no such thing as having bad behavior towards workers, etc., etc. So that's sustainable palm oil.
How much of Malaysian palm oil is sustainable palm oil?
Well,
I'm almost afraid to ask, actually.
Well, no, you'd be very surprised.
The truth might be scary.
No. I think Malaysia has done well. Malaysia now produces about 41% of all sustainable palm oil in the world. Mm-hmm. And that makes up to about 25% of all Malaysian palm oil is actually certified as sustainable, according to the RSPO.
Who audits?
Who audits? Ah, okay.
Who decides that Malaysian, you know, palm oil producers are indeed sustainable?
We have a robust certification scheme which tries to make it tries to assess these companies in a credible way. So we have asked or given the rights to certification bodies, third-party certification bodies, to go and audit these plantations. So these certification bodies that are usually international, they have no business links with the plantation that they audit, and they are not obliged to the RSPO in any way. So that's why we call it third-party certification. We operate at arm's length from the certification bodies, and the certification bodies also operate at arm's length from the people they audit. Now, on top of that, to add another layer of credibility, we have an accreditation body that's also third party that checks on certification bodies. So they basically, we have also the policeman's policeman.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right.
Ensure credibility.
And that's interesting. And do you have foreign members as well? Just not Malaysian producers,
yes.
Right?
The bulk of our members are foreign companies. Mm-hmm. We have the largest companies in the world in our membership. From the big players like McDonald's, Walmart, Burger King, and all that, to the smallest smallholder association or smallholder cooperative. We also have community-based organizations in our organization. And today, that makes up to about 1,800 members we have spread across 72 countries in the world. So we are very international, and we got basically most of the multinationals who deal with palm oil, either in the end product that they produce or in their trade, they are all members of the RSPO.
We are the second largest producer in the world.
Second largest producer of palm oil and second largest producer of certified sustainable palm oil.
Okay. Who's the top producer?
The number one producer of both is Indonesia.
Indonesia. Yeah. Okay. We were number one before, a long time ago, weren't we?
For palm oil, yes.
Yes. Not really the case anymore. But when you talk about the criteria, Dato, I'm just very, very curious. When you send in people to audit and, you know, what are Malaysian palm oil producers struggling with most at the moment? As far as meeting the criteria is concerned?
I think the biggest challenge for many of our stakeholders or members, or even those who are considering being members, is the realization that there is a need to do this. I think the first stage of change is the denial stage. In any change, there's always this stage of denial stage. And these it's got to do with the history. This crop has a long history in Malaysia, and there's a lot of practices that's been, you know, firmly embedded in the industry. And that's the first challenge, is to realize that things have to change. Business as usual is no longer possible. A legal license is important to operate, but a social license is also equally important in this day and age. So I think that's the biggest hurdle that they have to overcome.
When you talk about sustainable for palm oil and to be RSPO certified, what are the benefits?
Well, we now have, with great credibility, understand that with certification comes greater efficiency. And we have done so far at least three studies or four studies now by universities on smallholders at least. So the smallholders that we have certified now have shown great improvement after certification, up to 20-27% of yield improvement, for example, or income improvement. So certification in the first place helps that particular group or stakeholder become more efficient. That's number one. Number two, the benefits of certification is you get access, or you can maintain access to some of the more mature markets, some of the premium markets, I would say, Europe being the number one premium market that we know of today. So I think these are the two top benefits of being certified.
Have the smaller producers bought into the idea?
Well, actually, it takes a lot. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say it's easy to talk to small producers. I'm talking about smallholders. But we have had a good degree of success with smallholders. Today, we have certified in total 145,000 smallholders across the world. We continue to grow yearly. We have a fund that promotes, tries to help out these smallholders to get certified. That fund is a revolving fund, and we have it, you know, it's not as big as government funds, but we use it to maximize, and we've got 145,000 people out of it. We have in that fund now $1.5 million. So we are talking to smallholders, and we're finding more and more innovative ways to reach out to smallholders so that they can come on board and on this certification journey, on this sustainability journey. We owe a lot to our stakeholders, large companies who are directly dealing with smallholders, for helping these smallholders raise their game and come on board this journey with us together as well.
Can you completely negate environmental impact or the criteria, based on the criteria to be a sustainable certified palm oil producer? Can you completely negate negative impacts?
Right.
In my mind, it's impossible.
Exactly. It's like saying, can a person be completely sustainable?
Mm-hmm.
So why is it impossible? I think we have to understand sustainability is the nexus of three important components. It's the nexus of the people aspect, planet aspect, and profit aspect, right? Without one of these components, sustainability does not happen. So real sustainability is achieving this perfect balance between the three. Now, over time, we know with science, with new technology, these components will change, right? For example, in the old days, we never knew that greenhouse gases was important,
mm-hmm.
let's say. Today, we know. Therefore, if we now know, we have to address and tweak our systems a little bit to ensure that we encompass this issue as well. So we can never completely negate, because we can never completely grasp the issues every day. It changes every day. So we need to always keep asking ourselves, what are the issues on the table? What's relevant on the table today? And how can we address it? And we must not stop asking this tomorrow and the day after.
We will come back and find out whether or not Dr. Gerald Weber feels palm oil has a sustainable future. I mean, it's come under fire for deforestation, to extinction of wildlife, to unethical practices, to opaque business operations and land conflicts, just to name a few. So where is palm oil going with all of this? Up next, if you have a question for him, send it through text 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio. Good afternoon, it's Meera Sivasothi, and on the show to me today, Dato Gerald Weber, Secretary General of the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, better known as RSPO. We're discussing sustainability in palm oil and what's next for them. There's actually going to be a roundtable meeting on sustainable palm oil, Dato. The theme for this year's is sustainability, what's next. What are some of the key issues that you're going to be discussing at this conference?
Well, I think at this conference, we're going to discuss, as the theme suggests, is what's next, what's around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
In many markets around the world, the concept of sustainable palm oil is quite mature. People understand it. People know that the RSPO is one of the tools to get assurance that the palm oil they use is sustainable. Now we are asking the question, well, what's next? Because once everybody gets to know about this, what's coming up next? And it's really about how we as RSPO are going to handle ourselves. Do we need to handle ourselves in a different way in the coming decade? Because we have been in existence for more than 10 years now, and we need to ask ourselves what's coming up next in the coming decade, and how can we align ourselves better to address what's coming up next in the following decade.
How has the industry evolved over the last 10 years?
Oh, tremendously. I mean, when I started on this kind of work, the word sustainability was extremely foreign to many people, especially to local industry.
Now I think it's used very loosely.
Very loosely, maybe, but very commonly, but in a good way, because I think that's the first step towards this journey on sustainable development. You first have to get to grips with what it is to be sustainable, right? At least conceptually, you should understand. So I think that's a good thing. Over the last 10 years, we've seen industry change tremendously. In fact, now, a lot of the industry players within the RSPO want to go beyond the standard, want to go further than the standard, which is fine, I think. Which just shows that the how fast the sector has absorbed these concepts. And now they want to do much further, to go much further, much faster.
If you have a question for Dr. Daryl Weber, send it through via text message. It's 016-201-9000, or you can tweet BFM Radio. Davin is asking, Dr., what are your thoughts on the abuse of foreign workers in palm oil estates? Because he's met many Lombok Indonesians who have had horror stories to share. I mean, how does the RSPO play a role in that?
Well, we certainly don't condone it, that's for sure. I think, and I invite Devon, your caller, or the guy who, the person who wrote in the question, to really, if you have evidence of this, come to us and let us know who it is that is causing this harm to these poor people. With the RSPO, it's very clear that you must treat your workers right, and we've got several criteria or indicators to tell you how to do it. And we have a zero tolerance on this one. So, if there is such a case, this company will, or this, if it's our member anyway, and we have a complaint, then they will be brought. It will be brought up through our complaints process, and of course, the ultimate sanction we have is we can terminate the membership. Termination in itself may not be, to some people's eyes, it's not such a great big deal to be terminated, from the RSPO. Mm-hmm. But it does have implication in the markets. And the markets will sit up and pay attention that an RSPO member has been terminated, and you may come across some difficulties in trade later on.
What if you are not an RSPO member?
Well, if you're not an RSPO member, then I guess you can always rely on the existing markets that you have. However, as I said, markets are changing. Several countries around the world are now saying that they will only buy certified sustainable palm oil beyond a certain date. Mostly they use 2015 mm-hmm. as the date. So more and more countries will be changing their policies with regards to palm oil and sustainable palm oil.
Palm oil is, of course, always under fire for being associated with issues like deforestation, as I mentioned earlier, extinction of wildlife, unethical practices like what Davin says, land conflicts. Do you feel that palm oil really has a sustainable future?
Actually, palm oil, amongst all the vegetable oil crops out there, has the best ability to be sustainable because of many things, but in particular, two things. It's the yield. The yield of palm oil is extremely high compared to the other vegetable oil crops. That means you need less land for the same amount of oil produced by other...
But our yields per hectare is dropping, isn't it?
No, I think our yields, is rather than dropping, it's remained stagnant for quite some time. That's an issue. Mm-hmm. But I do think that even without this improvement, it's still very high compared to the other vegetable oils. So it's about 4 to 10 times higher than the other vegetable oils. So I think, anybody talking about alternatives to palm oil is not being entirely realistic. I think what you should be talking about is an alternative to unsustainable palm oil. We want palm oil to be around, but we want it to be done much better, right? With impacting the planet less. And therefore, instead of asking for, to switch to another edible oil, I think you should switch to more sustainable palm oil.
And this pressure is coming from the West?
Well, actually, no. I don't know where this thing comes from. If you look at the newspapers today, I mean, if you look at the forest reserve being cleared, for example, for oil palm.
Yes, I'm very upset about that.
It's not the West is making noise. I think it's our local population.
As far as that is concerned, yes, I'm very, very upset about forest being cleared for palm oil.
Yeah.
Is that really the way forward? I mean, do we really need to do that? Why can't we increase our yields per hectare instead and work on that?
I agree, and this is what we in the RSPO want to happen. So in the RSPO, we not only must you do well to get a certificate, but you must show improvement every year. So if you don't show improvement, the auditor will say, well, what are you doing in terms of yields? Why aren't you improving? And if you show no effort to improve yields, for example, or reduce input like on pesticides or other agrochemicals, then you stand a risk of not getting a certificate next year. So that's from the RSPO's perspective. We have seen enough evidence to know that without clearing forests, you can still proceed in a sustainable development of this commodity. However, I have to say that in some countries, that might not be the case because there are new frontiers for palm oil. And palm oil is a very good crop to bring people out of poverty. And in some of these countries, it may be that you have to clear some land to, you know, change the land use from forest to something else, to oil palm, for example. We hope, though, that in these countries, they make a conscious decision on you know, just how much they want to trade off forest areas or important areas with economic development. I think that has to be clear from the get-go, rather than you know, realizing later on, once you're fully entrenched in the industry, that, oh, we've made a mistake. I think that's dangerous.
How do you, let's look at home, Sabah and Sarawak. Sabah, yes, especially, a lot of land clearing for palm oil plantations of going on over there. How does the RSPF play a role as to whether or not there is really a need for it?
Sabah is close to me because I am a Sabahan, mm-hmm. so I know exactly the story.
Wonderful.
I do think land clearance in Sabah has reached its peak. Well, you know, it's reached its peak in the past, a long time ago. I think Sarawak is clearing, is still actively clearing land. And I think that the RSPO members in Sabah, at least, are playing a very positive role in influencing the behavior of the industry there in Sabah. So we heard, for example, that many companies now are contributing to wildlife conservation. We hear many companies now are pulling back their trees that were planted in the riverbanks, pulling back away from the riverbanks now to respect the river a little bit more. So we see positive improvements. And I think as far as forest clearance is concerned in Sabah, I think that has gone past. It's still probably going on in a very small scale now, and which we as RSP members do not get involved in. And we hope that through the influence of our existing members in Sabah, we will be able to influence the industry in general. Sabah.
Has it got a larger economic impact when you clear forests for palm oil?
This is always the big dilemma for a lot of people. The fact is, if you maintain land use as forest, the economic value is going to be far less than keeping it as palm. That's on face value.
Yeah.
But there are other, many people forget about the other values that forests do bring in. For example, flood mitigation, example, erosion control and all that thing. Those are not costed in. So
and
everybody
then the
knows
rich flora, fauna and know,
flora and
wildlife.
Fauna.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's so many other values within a forest that's not valued at the moment. And this is the problem right now. But it's not a problem only for Malaysia, it's a problem around the world. Because the only recipe people know is that to achieve economic success, you must trade in natural resources. So unfortunately, that's a recipe available. However, organizations like the RSPO want people to pause and consider the consequences and do proper due diligence before you embark on any of these kinds of developments. So what we really do is make people think, before you actually commit to developing this area, have you checked whether there's important wildlife there, for example?
There is always going to be important wildlife. Well, there's always going to be flora and fauna. Well, there's always going to be a role for the forest.
There's always going to be a role for a forest.
And we've lost 50% of our forest cover.
Yes, that's very unfortunate,
Malaysia.
I think.
That is a lot.
Having said that, I think that in Malaysia has also benefited a lot from the palm oil sector. And I think it's trying to get that balance right? I think that's important. We have to acknowledge that the palm oil industry has played a huge role in poverty alleviation, huge role in rural development, but also it's taken its toll on the environment and sometimes the local communities. So how do we balance it? How do we remove all the nasty things surrounding that kind of development and promote all the good things? You know, I've always told people it's a conundrum. On the one hand, it's probably the world's best crop. On the other hand, it's being developed in very sensitive areas. Mm-hmm. So how do we resolve this conundrum? It's also good and bad at the same time.
The other issue that I would have with the palm oil industry is the use of chemical fertilizers. Mm-hmm. You're very dependent on chemical fertilizers, mm-hmm. which, you know, after a while, that Odero, where do you see the soil being able to sustain and continue sustainably, you know, this plantation sector? At some point, how much chemicals are we going to inject into the earth?
So I think, let me first say on a macro level, I think the industry uses far less than many other commodities. If you look at all the other edible oils, they probably use the least. So that's on a macro level. However, we do know, and we know this as a fact, because based on research we did on smallholders, that especially smallholders have been using fertilizers in an overzealous manner. Mm-hmm. Because they basically sometimes just listen to advice and they just pour the fertilizers or agrochemicals like herbicides, you know, they just use it. So with proper standards, they learn to understand, they learn to use it more efficiently and effectively, I think. So whilst they, so to summarize, overall, I think the industry, if you compare it with other vegetable oils, it uses very little fertilizer. But then if you look at it on more detail, there are many, many people who still do not use this kind of input material wisely or efficiently.
Do you think that could be a reason why our yields have not gone up and are stagnant at the moment?
Huh. Well, I'm not an expert. I can't say that I'm
not
an expert.
You're not an agronomist, okay.
But we do know that there is a huge discrepancy in the yields of smallholders and the larger plantations. And if the country wants to move up its average yields, then they need to work on smallholders. And we know that once you work with smallholders, the improvements can be very significant.
And that's how much of a difference they make.
Yeah, they make a huge difference.
The RSPO has come under a lot of criticism, Dato. I mean, according to the Malaysian Sustainable Palm Oil Certification, the RSPO, since developed by the Oil Palm Business Fraternity, only involves major oil palm players and works under the business standard. Is this the case?
Absolutely not. I don't know where that comes from. Well, just to give you some numbers, right? We have, since 2013, a smallholder fund, as I said earlier, which we try to aid smallholders to get certified. And that smallholder fund is, it's usually a 50% of all our unspent income goes to the smallholder fund, and 10% of whatever trade on sustainable palm oil, 10% of what comes to us goes into this fund. So it's now at $1.5 million. That's one set of numbers I can give you. Another set of numbers is we actually have certified 145,000 smallholders across the world. So
what about Malaysia?
Oh, I didn't break down the numbers by country. So we have definitely worked with smallholders, and we are trying to. Of course, our reach cannot be as far as governments, and we do think government has a role here to reach out to these smallholders and help them in a much bigger way, far more than what we could do as RSPO. And I think that's essential, that we get government to reach out to smallholders, to help them get certified, at least to help them access markets. I think that's very important.
How much of a role does government play as far as RSPO is concerned?
Oh, we've been working with governments to understand whether we are in conflict with government. We are not in conflict. Our standards are, we check to see whether we have legal conflict with government rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. And of course, we find that we are not, so therefore we can continue on certification. We work with the Malaysian Palm Oil Board, for example, recently on smallholders. The Malaysian Palm Oil Board actually, their representatives actually sit on one of our smallholder working groups. So we have that kind of relationship with government agencies.
Earlier this year, the Malaysian Palm Oil Association, which represents the private plantation companies, they were debating if they should quit the RSPO. Did that happen?
No.
Okay. Do we know what were some of the issues?
Actually, it's an internal thing that I haven't yet been told why. But I only know that the conclusion is that they happily remain in the RSPO. Mm-hmm. And we see that more Malaysian companies are becoming RSPO members. So we see all this as good signs.
Some planters have also claimed that governance and aspirations of the RSPO had changed, where they seem to see an increasing involvement of NGOs such as WWF-linked individuals and Western Green activists had been found at all levels of the RSPO task force. In my mind, this is a good thing. Not the best for the planters, though. I mean, what's your response to that?
It's one of those half-truths, I guess. And I'm very happy to answer these kind of questions. It's very simple. As the Secretary General of the RSPO, my main job is to ensure that I facilitate discussion. And how do I facilitate discussion? And to break it down very simply, I prepare a table that's large enough. I make sure there's enough seats. And I make sure that every single stakeholder group, remember I said there's seven,
yes.
Every single stakeholder group is represented effectively at these discussions. So at any of our working groups, we must have the seven stakeholder groups. Now, to make things even more complicated, we make sure that every one of those stakeholder groups have veto power. So if there's 10 people in the room and just one person says, I absolutely disagree with this motion or this proposal, nothing gets out of the room. It doesn't leave the room. The discussion continues. So this is one of the fail-safe mechanisms we have to ensure that no one stakeholder group is ostracized. So, you know, so that the NGOs cannot say, well, you know, you outnumber us, you know, therefore we feel bullied. Or the growers can say, well, you know, there are more buyers in this room than us, so we feel bullied. No, I think the mechanisms we have are there to ensure that everybody has a say and everybody can say no and stop a process.
But how much of a voice are you in the industry?
Sorry.
How much of a voice are you?
RSPO?
Yeah.
Well, I think we, as I said, many countries recognize the RSPO as a credible standard. Many countries have now made promises that they will only buy certified sustainable palm oil. We are now working with countries who want to make a claim that they will only produce RSPO certified sustainable palm oil. And we have, you know, now several links, very close links with United Nations and its agencies. So we are actually, I mean, we are quite influential, I would say.
On the flip side, the environmentalists claim that RSPO certifies a certain percentage of the palm oil from participating companies as it's sustainable, but the criteria used for certification are not comprehensive. And even WWF, one of the founders and key promoters of RSPO, has said it no longer considers RSPO certification sufficient to guarantee for responsible companies. Uh-huh. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that's a fair claim. That you know, there will always be a stakeholder group that feel that we haven't gone far enough or fast enough. But I think we have to remind everyone that the RSPO is in this game to transform whole markets. We don't want to become a niche player. We want to become a norm. So to become a norm, you can't run too fast or jump too high so that it doesn't inspire anybody to move, you know. If you're way too fast, way too high you set the bar, it will inspire people to do nothing. So we need to set the bar just high.
Baby steps.
Well, not really baby steps. Baby
You've
steps
passed will be that.
But it has to be, let's say the bar has to be set at an inspiring level,
yeah.
Right? Something you can aspire for rather than say, you know, rather than you look at the bar and say, well, that's too high. You know, why should I bother even jumping? So I think that's how we should set the bar. Now, what the RSPO needs to do, continue doing, is understand that we need to keep moving forward. We need to keep improving. And the only way to do that is to bring all these stakeholders together and continue this discussion. Because I firmly believe you need to bring as many stakeholders on board, because we don't know all the issues. And if you don't know what all the issues are, you can never have the solutions. And without the issues, no solutions, no sustainability.
So faced with all of this, how much further do you think the RSPO has to go before you achieve your objectives?
Well, the RSPO, I think, has a long, long way to go. I think you will hear in the next few days lots of news about the RSPO and the partnerships we have. We have very strong partnerships throughout the globe, and a lot of people rely on an organization like RSPO as a tool to prove that they are moving in the right direction. Governments rely on us, companies rely on us, IGOs like United Nations, World Bank and all that, they rely on some of the aspects within RSPO that helps them show that they have progress on agriculture development being sustainable.
So how do we as consumers play a role in all of this?
Consumers play an essential role in helping out the RSPO push its agenda. The biggest role that consumers can play is to ask. Ask whether the products that they buy have palm oil, and if it has palm oil, does it have sustainable palm oil? And the easiest way to do that is to ask, is to look out for the RSPO trademark on pack.
For chocolates, for an example, that trademark's not going to be there.
Well, some chocolate manufacturers do put the trademark on, some don't. But those that don't actually have it on their website, or if you ask them, many of them will tell you whether it has certified sustainable palm oil or not.
Okay, so maybe labeling is something that we should move more aggressively towards, isn't it?
Well, that depends. There's only so much space on a pack or packet of chocolates, let's say. So, for example, when you think of chocolates, you think of cocoa and sugar, right?
Yes.
So people want to see a label that says something about cocoa rather than palm oil, let's say. So I think if you were to put all the ingredients with a logo, then there'll be no space actually to put the word chocolate. So I think it's about brands communicating that they are sustainable and they will assure all their consumers that everything in there is sustainable, and it can back it up with claims if they are asked.
For more information, you can actually visit the website. It's rspo.org. Would you have a message for all of us on sustainability in palm oil?
Well, I think sustainable palm oil is essential for Malaysians, not for the West. Don't think of it as, you know, a Western thing. Think of it as a very Malaysian thing. If you have sustainable palm oil, then you would also have a chance to have cleaner rivers. You will also ensure that the local communities are not marginalized. You will also be assured that rare, threatened, and endangered species would be protected, not only by government agencies, but also plantation companies who are doing an excellent job now protecting these species. So I think, you know, if you want to think about sustainable palm oil, think of it as an action for Malaysians, by Malaysians.
Thank you very much for joining me. Dr. Gerald Weber, Secretary General of the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, on sustainability in palm oil. What's next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.